main thing is doing. Mm-hmm. You know, my faith, I believe faith moves mountains, but not just by wanting it. You know, I always joke some of the young filmmakers I work with and some of the young people I know, the new Z generation and millennial generation, I always say, you have their philosophy is, I want, therefore I am. And I always say, no, you forgot a step. And that step is, I become. Faith is active.
Yes.
It's not a passive verb. It's active.
Yeah.
You have to work at it.
Hello and welcome to Here's to Life with Tori Reid, presented by Victory & Noble, a storytelling company with executive producer Patrick Howell and producers Tori Reid and William Broden. Here's to Life with Tori Reid was brought to you in part by...
We are pleased to share that we are staying healthy and hydrated throughout this edition of Here's to Life with Tori Reid, courtesy of our partners at Vivro Water, a sustainable solutions company that mirrors our commitment to clarity, focus, and a better world. Vivro's water solutions for business have already helped divert tens of millions of wasteful plastic bottles from landfills and waterways. Every day, Vivro systems across the globe help forward-thinking companies transform their own on-premise water into a source for pure and reliable filtered hydration. Let Vivro help you and your business leave a legacy of stewardship, health, and wellness that will literally make you feel good inside. Go to vivrowater.com, V-I-V-R-E-A-U water.com for more information.
This is a very special episode from a woman to a father, Tim Reid.
Hello, daughter.
Hello, father. Today I'm with a most beautiful soul, father, creative, visionary, risk taker, man, husband, someone I like to refer to as woke before woke was the thing to be.
Yeah, I've never been asleep. I don't know. They knocked me out. They tried everything. But I just keep my eyes
open. We're sitting here on the balcony at the Ramada Plaza in West Hollywood.
Yes.
And it was the former site of the Tropicana Hotel.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah, on the end of the famous Route 66. And so residents and guests such as Janis Joplin stayed here, Bruce Springsteen, the Beach Boys, Van Morrison.
Wow.
And of course,
I've been in this place in and out, had an apartment here. I've recommended this place for friends. I've been associated with this hotel now going on about 20 years.
Yep. Yep. So of course, you along with all the other rock stars, aka Venus Flytrap, lived right here.
Yeah, right here.
Yep. Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin used to sit poolside.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of history.
A lot of history in this place for me and for all those other people. But who knew?
Who knew?
Yeah, I was just looking for a night. I've always liked this area. You know, when I mm-hmm. came here in 75, mm-hmm. the first place I chose to live was a block over on West Bourne.
Yeah.
I will never forget it. It was a little cold water flat. I think I was paying $150 a month. And thank God for unemployment at that time. And I just like the area. It's one of the safest communities
Absolutely.
In all of Los Angeles. But I just like the area. It was changing at that time. Mm-hmm. But the people and the kind of businesses here was always open. I always felt comfortable here. Mm-hmm. Always. No matter what, you know. Whether you're in a straight bar, gay bar, it didn't matter.
Just
everybody was sort of like, this is where we live and we want to have fun here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've been coming back, and I lived, when I was doing Sister Sister, I was four blocks over on Doheny, five blocks on Doheny.
That's right.
Condominium there for a few years. So I like this area.
Yeah. And so you come back, of course, to Los Angeles quite a bit. You're here in town.
Mm-hmm.
You are a proud grandfather.
Isn't that wonderful?
It's wonderful.
Grandfather. But not only grandfather graduating from high school.
Exactly.
That snuck up on me. I think I overslept, woke up, and she was like, in high school?
Yes.
And now she's graduated. It was certainly for my son, it was the proudest event, I'm sure, one of the proudest in his life. But for me, too, because, you know, I look at you guys, I look at you, I look at my son, and now I'm looking at Skylar, and the Reed clan continues. I mean, it's
Absolutely.
Like, that is the future. You guys are the future.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good to join you as your future continues to grow.
How was it seeing her walk across that stage?
Well, she didn't really walk. I think she trotted. She was ready to get into a new life.
Yes.
She bust across that stage.
Yes, she did.
Tim Reed II is my dad's oldest, and this is his tribute to our dad on Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day, Dad. I love and honor you. It's an honor to have your name. You have set the bar in my life for what being a real man is, for what it takes to get through challenges, for what it takes to hit the mountaintop and win victories and be a grand champion in life. You've given me the codes on how to seek the knowledge and seek the wisdom to prepare yourself, to prepare your armor for what life brings. You've shown how to take a moment to enjoy, and even more importantly, to dream, and then press ahead, the passion it takes to manifest, and just showing how it's done. You've blessed so many people in your lives, giving them shots when no one else would. And you've also taught me how to filter what can benefit me and what will not benefit me, which is important to have the discernment. Your creativity is amazing. The ideas you have and the execution it takes to make them a reality. It's so awe-inspiring. And with all that said, just being a good father to me and being there for me, whether we're shoulder to shoulder or across the country or across the world, you've been there for me. You've given me that word of wisdom. You've dusted me off and sent me back in the game with proper coaching. It's important to me. I've been truly blessed. The Heavenly Father really, really hooked me up with a great father. And I honor you. I love you. You are a grand champion. You are a lion among men. And it's an honor to have your name. And it's an honor for me to just been a part of your life and you'd be a part of my life. So once again, happy Father's Day, Dad. You are a real man. Show me what it takes to be a real man. I love you then, now, and forever. I appreciate you.
But again, it's about legacy for me now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not so much about trying to be the next star, director, producer with a hot property. It's really about legacy. How do you remain in the minds and the psyche of your family and your friends is by the deeds you do. And so right now, everything that I'm focusing on in my career and even in, especially in my family, is to build upon that legacy. And I look at Skylar as really so important right now. And she's going to be going to college where I am now living, which is, it was her choice. I had nothing to do with it.
No bribes happened.
But she happened to pick a wonderful university, and she'll be going there. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be interesting, too. Because, you know, I didn't see her that much over her life. I kept her in the early part of her life after her mother had passed. And I would go over, because I was living out here at the time, more often. Mm-hmm. And I watched her grow. And even when she was a little one-year-old, she displayed to me some qualities that I had not really seen in my children or other children in terms of her ability to analyze. She was analytic at 1 year old. One day I watched her. I was keeping her, and it was a toy chest. And she was playing with something and wanted something out of the toy chest. So she crawled over and pulled herself up and tried to lift the top. And she couldn't do it. And it was frustrating her. And she was like, And I start to intervene and do something. I said, no, let me see if she's going to figure this out. And I just sat there. And she did it a few times. And finally, she stopped and went into this analytic kind of thing. And she looked around. She grabbed this huge teddy bear. It must have weighed 3 pounds or 4 pounds. This huge teddy bear. She took it off. And then she took another toy off. She opened up the top, got what she wanted, put it down, closed the top, and put both items back. And I went, wow, she figured that out. It was like a... Oh, this girl here, she's like her mother. Mother, of course, was a rocket scientist.
Right.
Which we never could understand what she was saying when she told us what she did. Like, yes, that's wonderful. Yeah, wonderful. So much, Sonia. So happy you're a rocket science. She was calibrating heat shields for the space shuttle, and we're asking questions like, so what do you do?
Right. That's funny. There's so many things that I love and admire about you. Mm-hmm. You are a risk taker.
Yeah.
You are a catcher of dreams.
And a chaser.
And a chaser.
Yeah.
You embrace change.
Yeah.
You live. You truly live. You're oh so wise. Your passion personified. You're funny as hell. And to some see you as unsung, but you keep on singing.
I might use that. That's good. So
what are the lessons and values that you would want to impart upon your children, being Tim, myself, Chris, Skylar?
Yeah, well, it's really, you know, you don't want to take your victories to your head, you know? And you don't want to take your failures to your heart. You want to be able to rebound and abound in times when it's less likely that that could happen. You know, my career is has been brought about because when I had the decision to make in my spirit and my dreams, how long or what did I want to do in this business? Now, most people will say, and it's been going on and it happens, I want to be a star. You know, I want to be a star. I want to be the biggest whatever it is, actor, director, writer in the town, I want to win an Oscar. And when I was asked that by a friend, I said, I want to be in this business the rest of my life. And when I said that to this person, he said, you know, that's very interesting because depending on how a star is defined, your dream is bound by the definition of something. You know, it's like, if I want to be a star, whatever a star is defined. And in the days that my friend told me this, he had been a star. And in those days, a star was defined by your name above the title. You know, so-and-so in whatever the movie is.
Yeah.
And the day that he became a star was the day that his film opened. It was Randolph Scott, Rita Hayworth, and this gentleman, Ken Scott, in Red River or whatever the movie was. And he was sitting in the Chinese theater up in the balcony looking at it. And he went, wow, I'm a star. Mm-hmm. And he virtually never worked again.
Oh, gosh.
You know, he did a little TV acting, you know, McCloud, things like that. Mm-hmm. But he said, that's a lesson I'll never forget.
Mm.
He said, all I said is I wanted to be a star.
Yeah.
And two things. One is it reinforced what I had been told from a little kid. Be careful what you ask for because more than likely you're going to get it.
Yes.
So ask wisely.
Right. And be specific.
Be very
you always
specific
say that.
As you possibly can. Color, place, you know, the whole bit.
Yes.
And then so he said, when you say you want to be in the business the rest of your life, that means you will have hills and valleys.
Mm-hmm.
Hills and valleys. Your career will not be this.
Right.
It will be that sort of thing. And that's the way my career has been. And whenever I was in the valley and I wanted to keep moving forward or upward, I would look at the people around me or the people who were at the level that I wanted to get to. And I said, what do they do? What are their qualities? What are their characters like? And I would begin to shape myself while in the valley. You know, when I finished KRP, I weighed about 150 pounds, 52 pounds soaking wet. And I wanted to move out of the sitcom role because I saw then it was dying.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I want to get into one of those hour dramas or, you know, comedy drama things. Mm-hmm. And in that case, all it was for Black people were second cop, third cop. You, if you go back and look at the movies, the brother was always either flying the helicopter or doing something, but he wasn't the lead.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I want to do an hour show. Well, I knew I had to be second cop.
Yeah.
So I went to the gym, and I started buffing up. And I mean working out every day over a period of 6 or 7 months. I began to bulk up and build muscle mass.
Yeah.
And I started taking pictures and putting them in Variety and stuff. Finally, I got a call from Playgirl wanting me to do the centerfold. Burt Reynolds had done it, and this was a year after.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, why don't you do the centerfold? And I was like, Nick, I'm not going to strip down.
I didn't know this.
Oh, yeah. Not going to happen. So I said, I'll do it, but I'll do it in a workout situation. So I was buff, and I had on some pants with the thing and the arms, and I put it in there, and my career changed. Suddenly people saw me as this sort of buff guy, you know. I still had the beard, which was a decision I made when most people say, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, myself, I was the first actor in primetime history of television, Black, to be able to wear a beard on television. I mean, they literally forbid it.
Yeah.
And then also the first on primetime to wear an earring. I say that because Bradley from 60 Minutes.
Yeah, Ed Bradley.
Ed Bradley had one as well. We're about the same time. We used to see each other and laugh because it was only he and I in television that had a beard and an earring. We'd always hug each other. Kind of a nice acquaintance because of that. The moral of the story is you have to keep changing. You have to look at This is what I just did recently in the pandemic. I'm sitting home. Mm-hmm. It's either there or at my studio, which is about 10 minutes away. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there going, what am I going to do? And I'm, you know, I need activity. I'm talking about getting into trouble. You don't want me bored. So I decided to look at content. I got all this content. Mm-hmm. And I'm hearing this word streaming services. This is 2 years ago, streaming services and streaming. So maybe I'll open up a streaming service. So suddenly we went into this whole new frontier of streaming.
Yeah.
And now we have our own streaming channel, and we're ready to go international with that.
Yeah.
It came out of, trust me, I would not have done it had it not been for the pandemic. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to keep reinventing yourself. Most people don't like to reinvent themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, I love change. Change is the lifeblood of my passion. So I guess that's why I've been in the business 50 years.
There aren't many humans like my dad. Matter of fact, none. Zilch. He is an original. He's one of the great ones. I have a few favorite spirits that I adore, and he is at the top of my list, along with Bob Marley, Jimi Hendrix, Gordon Parks, Marlon Brando, and Prince. Sure, I'm his daughter, a loving, doting daughter who proudly dotes over her father, as he does with her. But my aesthetic has been refined with time. We come from a tradition of the best storytellers the world has ever known. And I know this. The greats have certain characteristics. They're bold. They're free. They are unrelenting in their quest for truth. They're marathon runners, not sprinters. They leave footprints that we can all follow. And they leave works for which we marvel in the ages to come. Sure, they make mistakes and are often misunderstood. But that doesn't stop them. They have to express what is inside, and above all, be true to their authentic selves. They're visionaries and create as the sun does, a light that not only illuminates for all to feel, but grows all that it touches. So this Father's Day, I interview the man who captivates, lifts me up, motivates, and electrifies my own spirit. He's a soul whose light far exceeds his earthly trappings or flesh. This show is a spirit song to Timothy Lee Reed, my dad.
I was going to ask you about change because you do embrace it. And I know at one point you said that's what keeps you alive.
It does. It's my lifeblood. It is change is not only inevitable, but if you embrace it, if you seek it, you are a part of change. You know, yeah. You have some influence. You may not get the credit for it, which certainly is something that I've lived with, always being on point. But change is just being there when the action's happening. You know, traveling to Africa as much as I do, you know, I'm in some of these countries, Cape Verde, Ethiopia, Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing years ago, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, when I was in Ethiopia, I'm going, this place is changing.
Yeah.
And now look at it. It's third fastest growing economy in the world, the first, top fastest growing in all of Africa. Cape Verde is saying, like, this place is changing. Wow. And I kept going, shooting documentaries, working for the government there, shooting their promotional pieces. And now I look at it, you know, we wouldn't know since you and I went there to shoot. I mean, if you go back now, you wouldn't know half the place. It's just change. It's wonderful. But to be able to see it and in some ways be a part of it, to help excite people about it, mm-hmm. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. You know, I'd like to get a little more credit for doing it, but other than that, I like it.
We're going to talk about that.
And a little more money, but other than that.
We're going to talk about that. Let's talk about the spirit mm-hmm. and living in the spirit. That is very important to you.
Oh, gosh.
What keeps your spirit alive?
I think main thing is doing. Mm-hmm. You know, my faith, I believe faith moves mountains, but not just by wanting it.
Yes.
You know, I always joke some of the young filmmakers I work with and some of the young people I know. The new Z generation and millennial generation, I always say, their philosophy is, I want, therefore I am.
Mm.
And I always say, no, you forgot a step. And that step is, I become. And in order to become, you have to train your skills, train your mind, adjust yourself for the success that you are dreaming of. Yeah. And for me, that's where the spirit comes in. You have to be spiritual in your belief systems. Faith is, and I always get in an argument with some of my preacher friends, they preach faith and they get everybody believing that, you know, you believe and have faith in something, it'll happen. Faith is active.
Yes.
It's not a passive verb. It's active.
Yeah.
You have to work at it. You can't say, I want a car. You have to say, I want a car and you want the color and I want the brand, I want the make, I want this. Now, what kind of job do I have to go get to earn the kind of money or move in the direction? You know, I want a job doing this. Well, is where am I living? Where I'm living, is this the right place? You know, maybe I should move toward where the jobs are, or where at least the profession that I'm seeking.
Yeah.
You know, but before you do that, you have to see and test yourself. Everybody comes to California getting off the planes and buses and cars and breaking down in Pasadena and walking the rest of the way to get here to become a star. But what are they bringing with them? Are they bringing any skills?
Yeah.
Are they bringing that tenacity? The song says, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. Well, that don't work in California. You could be, I always tell people, you could be, if you want to be a director, you could go to the best schools in the world, USC, School of Architecture and Design, SCAD. You could go all these places and be in the tops of your class, magnum cum laude. Come out here and you'd be driving an Uber.
Yeah.
Because, yes, you're skilled at it, but you still got to have that little bit of luck, a little bit of tenacity, but your spirit has to be such that you not only seek, but you attract the opportunities to you.
Yeah.
And in doing that, you got to be on the go. You cannot sit still. As my good buddy Spoon, who passed away.
John with a Spoon.
Yeah. He passed away way too soon. But he and I came out here about a week or two apart. And we met and became fast friends. And I used to always, tell Spoon, Spoon was a homebody. And I said, Spoon, ain't nobody going to break into your house and make you a star.
Yes.
You got to get out of this house. and he did that. And, of course, he became a major star. He's a legend.
Yes, he is.
You know, and against the odds, a lot of people didn't think Spoon was going to do it. But they didn't know Spoon like you and I knew Spoon. I mean, you grew up around Spoon. You know, you knew him. He was one of the funniest people I ever met in my life.
Yeah.
You know, and quick-witted. And he inspired me so much. We used to put together our money and come up with about $2 and go to Hughes Market and buy a barbecue chicken, go up to my cold water flat and sit there and eat, dream, and talk about what we're going to do when we get the money, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he really, in times when I was weak and I felt like cashing it in, you know, we would do something. Let's jump in the car and drive down to Rosarita Beach and get drunk. He was always funny, and his life choices were just hysterical, the things that we got into together or watching him and him telling the story about it.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things you need out here in addition to your faith that help you stay in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some very interesting stories about people who come out here, some who make it, and more importantly, some who don't. And this place will not only test your abilities, but it'll test your soul.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of souls out here that have been bought and sold for a lot less than they're worth.
Yeah. And I love talking to you about the soul and how we're keepers of the soul.
Yeah.
And you always say, no one can take your soul away from you. You give it to them.
Yeah. That's the thing about the people who espouse and talk about religion.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like their purpose is something other than what the books that I read talk about, spirituality.
Yeah.
Not so much a form of religion. But the one thing that I don't think that they teach enough in these religious palaces is the fact that, yes, sin is sin and all that. You know, the concept of hell, if you believe in it, okay, or heaven, if you believe in it, it's real if you believe it. But they don't talk about no one can take your soul.
Yeah.
I don't care how strong the dark forces may be. I mean, Lucifer himself can stand in front of you and demand it, but he can't take it. You have to relent. You have to say, okay, and you bargain. All right. If I give it to you, what are you going to give me? He may say, what do you want? I want to be the biggest music star in the world. I want to be the biggest director. I'll give you that. And again, be careful what you ask for and also how you ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people sell it and at what they think, a few million, a billion.
Yeah.
But the soul is
worth so much.
Three-picture deal, four-picture deal, name above the title, all those things. But your soul is more worth it. There is no value to the soul that you can put money on.
Yeah.
Because you'll never get but one. It's the only limited thing that's given to you at birth. You know, you can get a heart transplant. You can get almost every organ now, thanks to science, transplanted. But not the soul.
You're right.
You cannot get another soul. Mm-hmm. So it is, to me, always have been one of the most valuable asset in my arsenal of living is the soul. And so I've weakened it at times with my choices. I've put it in danger.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes down to that last signing, that last thing on the contract for it, I always go, nah, I back away. Can't do that. Can't do that. And I try to get anybody I'm working with to understand the power of the soul. And if you understand the power, then you can use it on your behalf, because then you have a barometer. Mm-hmm. You're going to have, you have a measuring. The consequences that you step into, you make a decision.
Yeah.
Can I accept those consequences? Is that going to endanger my soul?
Yeah.
And you may say, I'll risk it, as I have a few times. But at all times, know what you risk. Know what the ultimate payday is going to be. And each time the payday has been that, where the soul was expected or requested, I've given that up. I said, no. You know, I came with one. I want to take it with me when I go.
It's eternal.
Yeah. It'll ride somebody else's spirit later on. But right now, it's in me.
I wanted to know, I'm curious, how have your children, Tim, Chris, myself, how have we influenced your life? And what lessons have you gleaned from us, your children?
Wow, that's a good question. Well, three different children for sure.
Yes.
And in terms of character and challenges and rewards of having been a parenting element of their life. But they have actually changed me enormously. You know, we all make sacrifices. They make sacrifices, and all the things that have happened to us, divorces and all that stuff, deaths, that change us. And a family will witness so many of those things because of the size of it.
Yeah.
And graduations and all. Mm-hmm. But in watching my kids grow and seeing the characters, my father never really saw my character. He saw me emerging. Mm-hmm. But my father died at 53. I'm the elder of my entire generations of my family on my father's side.
Okay.
And I think about it all the time. When I told my son when he got to be 50, I said, do you realize my father died at 53 and you're now past that? Mm-hmm. And I get to see your daughter graduate. I said, you have no idea how that has affected me in a positive way. You know, I think it adds to my longevity. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you got nothing to live for, you don't try too hard to take care of yourself to live.
Right.
But wanting to see how you guys ventured out into life, the sacrifices we made way back when I go pick you guys up. I could have gone to Vegas. I could have hung out with the guys. Mm-hmm. But I said, no, I got to go pick up my two kids. And I'd get in the car and drive down to San Diego and get you guys. And you're going, oh, God, we got to go there to hang with. And now we're going to be chasing the train on the way back Sunday. I put you on planes. Remember, we lost planes. And, you know, you look back on it and you think, oh, my God, no wonder that would be tough.
Yeah.
Created a lot of tension. But also, I think it's something that I cherish. And I know many people with children my age, and most of them don't like their kids. Mm-hmm. You know, and we have our disagreements. We have our falling outs and all. But one thing I know is that the love that we have for all of us is strong. It is supportive. When I was fighting cancer and that day I had to go in for the critical operation that was could have gone either way, I will never forget. Probably will see that in the passing moments of my life. You're all standing around before they rolled me out into surgery. And my son, sort of like something out of The Godfather, said, I am now in charge of the family. Mm. And he stood there. I remember him praying.
Yeah.
And he prayed over me.
Yeah.
And I'm watching you guys. And I mean, a big smile came over my face. I was like, wow, this is cool. And I forgot all about what I'm going to go through. I'm just looking at, y'all are holding hands. Some of you holding, like you got my hand. And I said, we're all standing around this gurney. And this family was praying over the elder. It was praying over the head of the family. Mm-hmm. And my son was doing it. And I'm looking at you and I'm going, wow. When I went in that surgery, I went in with a smile on my face.
I remember.
There was no fear.
None. Yeah,
it's the most incredible. The last thing I remember as I was slipping into unconsciousness was the nurse laughing because I had said something about the doctor. They were laughing. And I woke up in the bed. You know, that's family. That's what's important to me. All the other stuff is great. You know, all this stuff is blessings. But the most important thing to me right now is family. And that's what that legacy thing is. I'm sorry I spent all of your inheritance, but I had a good time. You went with me. We were all over. We were in Paris. You were 13 running around Paris. That was money that I could have given you. But no, I took you to Paris. I took you to London. I took you all to all these places. You were there. You saw it. So when people were like, what happened to your daddy's money? Well, he spent it on us. We went places. Gave you all cars, trust funds. You went to college. You didn't worry about nobody owing nobody. None of you owe a dollar.
Nope. I was one of the few of my friends that didn't have college loans.
Yeah. I said, oh, I got my kids.
Yeah.
I go wherever I go, they go.
I love it.
So don't ask me where the money went. It went in that studio.
It went in there.
Nah, I got you. I got you. A little something, something.
A little something, something. How do you wish to be remembered by us, your children?
You know, when as a storyteller in my family, whenever the elders would get around and talk about their family members, mm-hmm. there was always one or two, like Sugarfoot. When they talk about Sugarfoot, there'd be a hush. Everybody sitting around, Sugarfoot. Hey, remember the time he got killed by the three Bat Cats? He was in the Cabrillo, decapitated. You know? And they said, Uncle Rufus. Yeah, Uncle Rufus. Uncle Rufus, boy, nobody best with Uncle Rufus. Remember when he killed that man? And he was in the penitentiary. Now, I say all that to say that. As a kid, when I would go down to Whaleyville, mm-hmm. I would pass this thing called the Three Black Cats. Mm-hmm. And every time I went there, I would think, that's where Uncle Sugarfoot was killed. In Richmond, I live now about 5 minutes from where the prison used to be in Richmond. Mm. And I remember at 9 years old, and then maybe at 13, that I would ride with my grandmother to go see her brother, Uncle Rufus. Mm-hmm. And I had to sit in the car, and I remember looking at the walls, thinking, where is this place? Mm-hmm. See the barbed wire, where is this place? And they would be in there for an hour or so and come out. And then they would talk about Rufus all the way back. And then one year, when my Uncle Joe was near his end, his brother, mm-hmm. I went, you were with me, I went to give him some clothes and some money, because mm-hmm. I had to catch a plane.
Yeah.
And there was this man sitting at the table, big imposing man. And he had on a white turtleneck, which I had given my uncle. Mm. I'm thinking, somebody took my uncle's clothes, and I'm trying to give this guy the mean eye. You're like, hey, is that my uncle's sweat or something? The guy just looked at me like that. And I was like, So I'm trying to, you all right, Uncle Joe? I tried to slip him some money. Mm-hmm. I'm all right, Junior. So as I'm walking down the hall, I stopped. I went, wait a minute. I turned back in and walked in. I said, excuse me, sir. Are you Uncle Rufus? He said, yeah. He had just been released from prison for murder. Mm. Been 20, I don't know how many years he had been in there. Mm. And I went, wow, sir, I heard about you all my life. I certainly wish I had the time and I could sit and talk to you. Mm-hmm. That's all right. And I left. I've never seen or heard of him since. These characters, these stories that people tell, I want you guys to sit around and tell stories of me. That's the only way I'm going to live. Beyond my, on this earth.
Yeah.
I'll live through your stories of me. I'll live through the stories that Tim says. I'll live through the stories, good or bad, that's how I'm going to live. That's how I'm going to be remembered.
Yeah.
And thank God I'm in a business where these images will be around forever.
Yes.
Venus will be floating out there in the atmosphere until nothing is ever broadcast again. You know? And that's how I'll live. I'll live in the memories of people who will tell stories about me, good or bad. Mm-hmm. But if no one ever speaks of you, if you never impacted life in any way, changed, put a smile on somebody's face or a frown. Mm-hmm. What's left of you? Where is your mark? What did you do? You know, that's what's important to me now, legacy. I want you guys to talk of me and tell these stories. Not all of which is kind of, you know, I mean, is it mistakes? But I lived.
Yeah.
I want you guys to, Dad, like you say, Dad took chances.
Yeah.
Dad gave it a shot.
Yeah.
You know, he fought, not necessarily a good fight, but he was a fighter. Mm-hmm. He had beliefs, not all right, you know, had a good side and a bad side, but I lived. Mm-hmm. I lived, I loved, you know. What else is there, you know? Mm-hmm. You can't protect yourself from death.
Yeah.
I found that out when I had cancer.
Yeah.
I'm very, very close to people and know of quite a few people, entertainers too, who have survived cancer, survived that bout of cancer, mm-hmm. and will die probably from something else. It won't be cancer, but they all go through the same metamorphosis. You know, you come out of it with a sense of, you lose your fear of death. Mm-hmm. I just told the Grim Reaper, not now. I'll see you later. Mm-hmm. But I also told him, you're going to have to find my ass. You'll always be looking for me.
Right. You're going to be doing something.
I'm going to be doing something, going somewhere. And I'm going to try to duck. You'll find me, but it ain't going to be easy.
Right.
You know, I'm going to give you a challenge. He's like, okay, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. This makes my job interesting. Right. Make Grim Reaper's job interesting. Just don't be waiting there for it.
Right.
You know, so if you guys just tell stories about me and share that information to other people and mm-hmm. around a drink, around or whatever, then life has been worthwhile.
Tim Reed is a spirit man walking in the flesh, like the Buffalo Soldiers and Bob Marley's eternal masterpiece. The song says, "There was a Buffalo Soldier in the heart of America, stolen from Africa, brought to America, fighting on arrival, fighting for survival. My father is all of these things, a spirit warrior, a dreamer, passion personified, not only to me, but to a generation of filmmakers, audiences, and free spirits. Dad is one of the wisest souls I know, always teaching, always learning. He understands how important it is to live in the spirit and being a determined and proud keeper of his soul. Showbiz isn't easy, and so his grasp on the power of propaganda, creating content, and most importantly, creating a legacy is a reflection of his purpose on this earth. His legacy is the true birth of our nation. You'll hear this in our part two episode. But suffice it to say, for now, as Bob Marley does, if you know your history, then you know where you're coming from. Then you wouldn't have to ask me, who the heck do I think I am? I am forever grateful I was raised on Bob Marley, and that was thanks to my dad. I'm also proud that he broke Bob Marley in the States on his second television show as the coolest nighttime DJ, Venus Flytrap, on WKRP in Cincinnati. This was before Marley was an icon. Dad has always been ahead of his time. Tim Reed is a lover and champion of his people, a fountain of youth, a fountain of truth, and infinite wisdom, a consummate doer and achiever, my favorite woke spirit, being, risking, living, loving. He is a visionary, a pioneer, an illuminated heart. He is my dad. We love you, Dad, forever.
Thank you for listening to Here's to Life with Tori Reed, executively produced by Patrick Howell. We hope you've enjoyed today's show. Here's to Life with Tori Reed was brought to you in part by
The Hilton Sacramento Art and West in Sacramento, California is committed to creating a safe and relaxing experience, including delivery of a clean stay from check-in to check-out. Located a couple of exits from downtown Sacramento and California's capital, our hotel provides a world-class stay, amenities, and rooms at the center of the California experience. California is a world-class economy with visionaries, doers, and dream catchers at its heart. Our mission, as with Here's to Life and Getting Deals Done, is the highest possible expression of excellence, business moxie, humanity, and client care. As the world moves at a fast and sometimes hectic pace, we will provide you with a peace of mind. The Hilton Sacramento Art and West is here to make your experience a better one. We look forward to receiving you. I am Ginger Levert, Director of Sales and Marketing at the Hilton Sacramento Art and West. Our focus is on the customer experience and a pristine excellence. When you travel to Sacramento, stay with us and I guarantee your peace of mind.
Check back with our page, herestolifeeveryday.com, for new episodes every second and fourth Sunday of the month. And if you like this show, don't forget to hit subscribe and be sure to leave a comment, rate, or review wherever you're listening, and share it if you can. So, here's to life, today and every day. So long for now.